I remember the first time I met her, I was in for John Maytham. Lovely lady, ran into her by accident somewhere in an elevator. And today, when she's back on the show, I'm in Johannesburg. Refila Moloto, how are you?
Hi, I miss you.
You are missed too, my sister.
What luck we have to be back together. And I it's so weird. I have to selfie here in the studio because you're not here.
Ah, man. So looking at, of course, as we normally do business in Africa, there's quite a lot to be said about the Norwegian fund and their decision to no longer invest in oil. What's the deal there, and how does it impact on Africa, and what should we learn?
Thank you so much for asking the question. You know, it came out about maybe 2 weeks ago. As you say, I've been away for a while. I've been on holiday in Thailand and minding my own business, reading the papers between countries, and the Norwegian central bank says we're no longer going to invest in oil. It is important for a couple of reasons. First of all, they were insistent at the time that they made this announcement that it was entirely on a financial basis. They were just saying that the returns from oil stocks were no longer giving them the returns that they seek. And then now, fast forward to about this week, I think, as I'm flying back to South Africa out of Singapore, I pick up the Financial Times, and there are a number of political players who are giving a couple of comments saying, you know, this is actually a debate about Norway having to decide who Norway is and what it is that we stand for, which is really, I mean, I remember retweeting the original article and saying this is a very important conversation, because to take a step back and maybe bring our listeners up to speed, I just want to highlight that Norway, obviously, first of all, is one of the oldest standing sovereign wealth funds, and one of the, and it is certainly the largest at $1 trillion. But it dates back as far as 1816 in terms of putting away savings from its oil and gas earnings. At the same time, it happens to be a bulwark of example for every other sovereign wealth fund and central bank in the world. And so far as we look to them for guidance, you guys have been doing this for a long time. You've been doing this successfully, and you have been doing this to a huge measure of success in terms of saving money for your government pensions. Tell us how to go. And one of the big areas where Norway tends to step ahead of the rest of the world is in being environmentally, socially, and governance conscious. Mm-hmm. What we call that is ESG. And what they do is that they're more engagement focused in terms of rather than sort of exclusionary in their investment. They try not to invest in extractive industries, the kinds that would find us in an environmentally or climate change heavy or impactful industry. So they try not to invest in mining. They try to invest in companies that are well governed. They try to invest in socially conscious companies. And you suddenly realize the quandary that they must be faced with when you're saying all of our money is in fact from oil. Yeah. And gas extraction, and yet we're saying we don't want to invest in anything of that kind. So back to what I was saying around the article that came out this week, when they say that they need to look at themselves and say, who are we as Norges Bank? Who are we as Norway? And what do we stand for? Mm. What they're asking as politicians is, are we really environmentally conscious if we are investing in oil stocks? Is this truly just a financial decision? The reason...
Before we run out of time, there are a couple of points also made by the people from the fund and their own research, making this decision to no longer invest, to make the fund less vulnerable to a drop in oil and gas prices, and also them having found that selling stocks in these sectors could be done without reducing returns. I find that very interesting.
Indeed, and I think it's also been a mixed bag in terms of that research as well. They're also trying to do a little bit of research into the correlation between actual oil prices and oil price stocks, although I really do think that is tinkering around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those are important things, obviously, to investigate for any country, but particularly in terms of how that impacts on Africa. I think the biggest part that really is the one that we need to pay attention to is that we have an existential crisis ourselves that's very similar to Norway's. Insofar as the sovereign wealth funds that have been developed in the past five years and stretching back even 60 years, have been established on the basis of commodities findings. Ghana established its oil fund. Angola established its oil fund. Mozambique wants to establish its. South Africa has been pushing against doing so, but at the end of the day, we make a lot of money from platinum. Mm-hmm. Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, they all suddenly found some commodities outside of sort of coffee and tea and flowers that they were suddenly able to earn foreign reserves from. And it is an existential question to ask, especially, you know, in a world full of climate change denialists, to say, are we able really to save for generations into the future using extraction finances? And I think that we are forced, obviously, because of its stature in the world and its size, to look at Norway and watch this quite closely.
A quick one, Rufilo, before we run out of time. So, yes. Obviously, as you mentioned, the history of the fund, the Norwegian fund, goes a number of years back, and they have reaped the benefits, even though they are making the changes that they are in a number of the countries on the African continent. I mean, we know the gas findings of the coast of Mozambique. Are we not being a bit too preemptive around what we could learn when it is still early stages in some cases for these extraction industries that we're talking about on the continent?
Absolutely, we are. And Ghana learned that the hard way, right? So Ghana started spending money before they earned it out of their gas findings and their oil findings. So we are getting a little bit of putting the cart a little bit ahead of the court. Of the horse. However, the thing that's quite important here, and why I insist, certainly from Ambassador Advisory's perspective, where I insist on paying attention to what Norway is doing, is the rules should be made before you make the money.
True.
Right? So what would we always do when we were kids? We were like, oh, when I win the lottery, I'm going to buy this, I'm going to buy that, and whatever. You must plan it before you get that ticket. Because once the money is there, everybody gets confused.
And you must also make sure that the benefits from those resources like gas actually come back to the country, because we know there are many examples where it is the political leadership that benefits and it goes offshore and ends up in other coffers and not benefiting the country.
Exactly, Koketso. And I would highlight to you that even as we speak today, so what South Africa, what Africa has in its favor is that we've got very young people contributing to all of our pension funds. What Norway has is that they're actually currently, for the first year in all of its history, paying out more than they are actually earning from their pension funders. And so you find yourself in a situation where they are actually being questioned by the people earning from those pension funds, saying, are you actually, even with all the success that you've had, are you doing as well as you should be? And so, yes, as African leaders and politicians and the like, we need to be aware of who we are earning that money for.
We need to do more. Rufilo, thank you very much.
Such a pleasure.
That is Rufilo Omolato there.